can start in 1 minute. 1 minute. Thank you for coming today. I'm going to try to project as much as possible if you can hear me on the Zoom. My name is Scott Reed. I'm the chairman of the Public Safety Oversight Committee. I'd like to thank Lloyd Hendricks and Matt O'Shea for joining me on the Public Safety Committee, as well as Chief Dame. We've been working over the last couple of months to start gathering information. And
if you turn the volume down, it'll go well.
Can't turn it off.
Is that better?
Yeah.
That's better. Good. I was getting like really good feedback at first. Like, wow, I'm really projecting.
Like applause, right?
Yeah. I'm going to give a brief presentation. Should last no more than about 10 to 15 minutes. And then the idea is to get your public comment back. We'll try to answer as much questions as possible if you have any. But again, the idea is to get feedback, not necessarily to answer questions that we may or may not know at this point. So, Emily, if you want to go ahead. So again, when we formed the Public Safety Oversight Committee, it was formed with the narrow scope for these first several months until a new council came on board and chose whether to continue with the Oversight Committee or not. But to look specifically at MPVFR operating costs, equipment costs for repair and replace, the current volunteer situation, and the current training situation. There is a future scope that a Public Safety Oversight Committee would have, and I apologize if I'm not everybody away, I'm just trying to project still as much as possible. Policing service, fire and emergency services, non-emergency public safety services such as good cause, emergency management such as hazard mitigation, and animal control agreements and costing. So those would be future things that a Public Safety Oversight Committee would look at, along with the stuff that we looked at today, or we'll be looking at today. Go ahead. So if you can see this screen, I wanted to present just a matrix of our current public safety setup. So E-911 dispatch. In previous years, we had no cost for E-911 dispatch. Currently, it is at $17,520. For policing services, previously, we paid $34,000 to Roswell for both E-911 emergency policing and non-emergency calling. That included the E-911 dispatch, policing, incarceration, and so forth. Anything that Roswell would have done for their residents, they would do for us. Today, we pay zero for Fulton County. For Fulton County, we get the policing and the incarceration, but we do pick up the E-911 dispatch, which goes to Roswell. So historically, it was Roswell. Today, it is Fulton County Sheriff's for emergency services and Roswell PD for emergency services if Fulton County does not respond. And then for non-emergency, it's Fulton County Sheriff's Department. For E-911 Fire and EMS, for fire emergencies only, we used to pay about $48,000 on average when you look over a 10-year. I'll show the historical cost in just a minute for operating, CapEx, training type stuff. Today, with our current agreement, we pay $88,608. That agreement, of course, expires at the end of January, which would necessarily be renewed should Roswell want to do it and council want to do it, but pricing could change dependent. Not going to speculate on that. So with that agreement, we get fire emergency only, we get medical emergency only, we do not get good cause response. Ambulatory services, that's if you have an actual ambulance show up at your house, not a fireman EMT, that's of course paid by your insurance company. Natural disaster, in other words, a big ice storm hits, tree falls in the woods and somebody's there to actually hear it. That is a bit of an unknown. It used to be MPVFR would respond to any emergencies during a natural disaster, but that remains unclear. And of course, animal control is and has always been Fulton County Animal Control Services. Right now, to be very clear about what those costs are, we pay about $270 a call. The reality is that changes on a monthly basis depending on the total calls that Fulton County Animal Control receives across all of Fulton County. They take the number of calls for each city, take their monthly expense and divide it by number of calls in each city, and that's how they get their costs. So for us, this past month, it was $270. It could go up, it could go down, depending on the number of calls throughout Fulton County. So, there have been a lot of questions. Who do I call? If you have a fire, if you see crime, if you have a medical emergency, if you are in a car crash, you call 911. Period. That goes to Roswell. Roswell dispatch will respond to the appropriate individuals. When you call 911, be prepared to answer a couple of questions. The first is the location of the emergency, including the street, and remember to say that you live in Mountain Park. There are some streets that Mountain Park has that Roswell also has as far as street names. Report your phone number, where you're calling from, and the nature of the emergency. Pretty much all you need to do. Emily? Wireless and on-call calls.
I'm sorry, can I ask a question real quick?
Yes.
We had a delivery truck that Home Depot has a delivery truck that did some damage in our home. Do I call 911 for that, or do I call Fulton County Sheriff? I need a police report.
Can I answer that question on the next slide?
Absolutely.
Okay. So 911 calls. When you pick up your phone, right, you make a call. FCC wireless 911 call regulations require that cell phone provider provide meaningful location data for you. However, even in 2021, when you call 911 from a mobile provider, your mobile provider, whether that's T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, does Sprint exist anymore? AT&T, Verizon, you have a Charter mobile phone, depending on the cell tower that you're on, and whether they have gotten location information from that cell phone will depend on how your mobile provider routes that call. They may route it to Roswell 911. They may actually route it to Atlanta 911. So dependent on your mobile provider and the cell tower that you're off of, that may go to a different call center. Now, the vast majority of them will likely go to the Roswell 911 because it still is 2021 and cell phones have made a lot of progress, but in other words, your operator, the E911 operator that you may get may ultimately be a different city than Roswell from a 911 dispatch. Once they have your information, the type of emergency, the location that you're at, they can then, if you're in a wrong 911 center, they can route your call appropriately. Good. Now, who are you gonna call? George, just answer your question. If you have a non-emergency policing services, based off of the description that you just gave me about the Amazon truck doing damage, that would qualify as a non-emergency in my book.
Yeah, it is.
Therefore, I would call the Fulton County Sheriff's Department, and I have the number up there. If you have an animal control issue, call the animal control, Fulton County Animal Control. And if you had a code enforcement issue, you call City Hall. If you are in any way, in any doubt of whether it is an emergency or not, dial 911. When you dial 911, you tell them the nature of the emergency. They will make a determination on whether that is an emergency or non-emergency and route it to the appropriate department. Yes, ma'am.
I told Jim it took me a couple of days to get a non-emergency through. My car got vandalized in my driveway. I finally got, Karen said, called Colonel Johnson. I called him. He said, I can't come. He sent me to somebody else. And they sent me to somebody else. It finally, and three showed up. But I was telling Jim, I had a bit of a time getting, and Colonel Johnson said that I got Marietta, because I was calling on my cell phone. And he said, he asked Labatt to please switch, and you know what he's talking about? Switch us?
Yeah,
over,
I already had a conversation with him about it.
Yeah, something needs to be switched over.
So, point being is that you ended up in a different 911 center.
Well, then I got to Fulton County and they couldn't help me. They didn't know what in the world, and so it was pretty wild.
I explained the situation to him that we are getting our 911 through Roswell, and that is what he thought we were getting through somebody else.
I knew it was something like that.
Okay. These first couple of slides were really just to answer a lot of the questions that are out there. Hopefully that answers who to call, what an emergency is, all that good stuff. Why sometimes your mobile phone, when you call 911 via mobile phone, it ends up someplace else. The next part of this presentation is really to start talking about fire EMS services and MPVFR. So, From January 1st to September 30th, had NPVFR been operational and able to respond to a call, they would have responded to 260 calls that they would have been dispatched on. The vast majority of those, 240, were in Roswell, and 20 were in Mount Park. That was based off of our intergovernmental agreement, or our IGA. This data, I'm going to make the presentation available online, but you'll be able to see like the month over month. And what you'll see in here for Mountain Park, they would have three responses to a fire. Those fires could have been an unspecified fire, an outside fire, or a structural fire, which I'll go into detail on the next slide. For good cause or for medical. As you can see, 50% of our calls in Mountain Park are medical related. 66% of Roswell's calls between January 1st and September 30th were medical related. This information comes specifically from the Roswell E911 Dispatch Center. Within Mountain Park, those 20 calls break down to three fire. One alarm, I apologize, that was me. That was canceled, by the way. There was no actual fire. It was my wife was cooking, and it turned out to be bad. There was an unspecified fire and a structural fire. For good cause, there was an accident, an electrical issue, a gas leak, and a general service call. In other words, general service call could be something to the tune of, I have a water leak in my house and I can't figure out how to turn it off. And then, of course, medical, one for bleeding, one for breathing, one for a fall, four for sick, and three for trauma.
What about, Scott, what about false alarms when somebody sets their alarm off?
So false alarms are still recorded. They're still dispatched unless they're canceled.
Okay.
But they are always recorded. That's why my alarm was recorded, but it wasn't actually responded to because I canceled it. Okay, so historical operating costs. On average, when you just look at purely operating costs and training, NPVFR over the last 10 years was $39,819. The maximum was $60,067, and the minimum was $15,861. Capital costs over the last 10 years, down the bottom, the biggest one being in 2011, we had $95,000 for building improvements, the fire truck, and the gator that was purchased. In 2019, 2020, there was $25,000 that was allocated to radios, but I don't believe that was spent, actually. Next. This was the majority of the work that we've done over the last several months. So what we looked at is if Mountain Park Volunteer Fire and Rescue were reconstituted, what would be just the general operating costs? What would it be to just stand up, have people there, start responding to things as general type stuff? So what we found out in year one, when you add up all those lines, and it's a little blurry for me too. I need better glasses. But you come out to about $30,118. Those stay relatively average across the board, even when you look at historical information. When you add in the training costs to be able to stand up NPVFR, this is where some of our bigger costs start to come in over the next 3 years if they were done. The biggest thing would be EMR, which we know is $610 per person. We would schedule approximately 7 people to go to that. An EMT course is approximately $3,000 per person. An advanced EMT is another $3,000, or you could combine them together as an EMT plus advanced EMT at $6,150. These are the same courses that any firefighter that gets cross-trained in EMT or an EMT only would take if they were working for Roswell, Sandy Springs, Woodstock, so forth. We looked at what the cost would be if we were to start training people purely speculative and saying, okay, we have this many volunteers, this is how many people we want to get trained versus people who would come volunteer already certified. So capital costs. We would have some capital costs over the next 3 years. The significant thing is the turnout gear, the scuba, and the radios. So the turnout gear costs $3,740 a piece. Those are the uniforms that they throw on. You see the guys slide down the pole and they pop into boots and they pull up their suspenders on. That's the turnout gear. The SBCAs are scubas without the U. Those are the tanks that they wear when they run into fires, or they may be responding to a hazardous condition such as a gas leak or other kind of, they need a breathing apparatus. Several years ago, many of the scubas were bought in en masse. We have about 24 of them because they only do about 30 minutes a piece per tank. And so if you're on site, you have three people on site, they're on site for 2 hours, they're breathing off those things, each person would take four, so there's multiples that they would need. But they were bought in bulk, and so a lot of them are expiring or will expire in the next several years. And so they run at $1,449 per tank. We budgeted over the next several years, we would need eight each year in order to get up to the standard that we currently have today. And then finally, the Motorola portable radios. A couple of years ago, some of you may remember, the FCC changed to what they call a FirstNet, where they changed out TV spectrum, so they went to a different frequency spectrum in order to upgrade all of our radios and work on the same systems that Fulton and many of our neighbors are. We'd have to continue. We've already started upgrading them. I think it was budgeted for radios a couple of years ago, which never actually got spent. But those would need to obviously be bought as well. So when you add all that stuff up, come to operating and training costs in year one of $49,500 and equipment costs of $26,900 or $76,000. That would decrease a little bit in year two and year three should NPVFR be set up. Next. Okay, so volunteers and training. There are currently 7 cross-trained firefighters EMT. So they're both firefighter two and EMT certified. We have one who is a certified paramedic. That's the next level up from advanced EMT. That's a person who's actually spent 2 years in college working on a 2-year medical degree for paramedics. We have 2 untrained volunteers currently, and then 2 station administrators that we have. Some of that is in flux. We've lost a couple of people over the last couple of months for various reasons. The type of training that we need. If you're a firefighter, we need registered volunteer. Firefighter 1 is trained, and Firefighter 2 is the desired by most fire departments around the state of Georgia. From a medical perspective, there's EMR, the first responder, the EMT, which is the minimum standard for most fire departments across the state of Georgia. Then there's advanced EMT, and then, of course, paramedic. Down the bottom, there's a, for illustrative purposes only, completely made up, but wanted to give a good representation of the number of volunteers we'd need just to get to 70%. And basically, we would need 18 volunteers. That would give us 34 hours of coverage every day. We'd be looking to have 2 people on staff, or approximately 13 hours per volunteer per week, or 8% of their total time, to get to a 70% coverage. To get up to 100% coverage, if you run the numbers, where you're looking in the 24, 26 volunteers. So, cost risk matrix, purely subjective on my part, though I tried to be as accurate to the options as possible. Option one, dissolve NPVFR, continue with the Roswell agreement. Pros and cons, those are the ones that I could think of. Obviously, a little bit of higher risk because we have a little bit of longer response time. We don't know what costs could change. Those agreements could change any time. So I put it at a bit of a higher risk. But cost-wise, it's not as much as option two, which is continue with the Roswell agreement and start recruiting NPVFR, replacing equipment until they could be stood up at some point in time. But that biggest con there is the fact that the cost for both Roswell and NPVFR would last for at least 18 months by my estimate and run rate, and it would be at least 12 months before we could get people trained up to a sufficient number where we could even approach Roswell to reconstitute an IGA. And then finally, third option, which has been suggested to me a couple of times. MPVFR is an EMS service only, given the fact that that's 50% of our calls. It would have a reduced cost, raise our risk profile a little bit because we'd still have to rely on Roswell for firefighting services and other things. But we would have somebody there to answer medical and good cause. We'll reduce the number of training you would have because you wouldn't have to train firefighters. You reduce the number of equipment that you would have. You wouldn't have to, one of those trucks wouldn't have to be serviced or maintained. You could actually get rid of it. And such, some of the equipment you wouldn't have, such as the turnout gear. You wouldn't have to have as many scubas because you still have to have them respond to like a gas leak or something like that. But it has a reduced cost. And that's pretty much the presentation. So I will now open it up to public comment. I'd ask that you please stand, if you're able to. State your name, and then I'm going to try to limit your comment to about 2 minutes so everybody can talk. And for those that are on the Zoom,
got the chat box
up. Okay, we have the chat box up. Emily will give your comment, but for most part, we'll try to do our best on Zoom. So open up. I had Mike in the back.
I'm Mike McKenzie. I just want to thank Scott for everything he just gave us. Thanks, folks.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Jackie Gentle. This is more of a clarification question.
Yes.
So if we went with option 3, does that mean if I had a medical emergency, MPVR would respond?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
If provided to qualify that specifically, right, you saw my training, we would still need the number of people that are trained to provide, you know, 24-hour coverage and stuff. So provided that you were called in that time that they were staffed, assuming that say 70%, yes, in the time that they were unstaffed, that would be with the intergovernmental agreement, so Roswell would respond to that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hey, Scott, Mark Murphy. What turnover rate is included in your numbers for fire personnel? Number two, at what level of service will we be able to get a no-cost mutual aid grant with Roswell?
So I have no turnover cost. Like I said, it was completely fictitious, so I can get a percentage level. Right now, if we train somebody, the ask would be that they dedicate 2 years to volunteer at MPVFR. So obviously there would be turnover, some things we couldn't control, but I don't know what that churn would be.
So you did not include turnover costs for us having to replace that person and potentially retrain the new person?
To answer the question in the way that you asked, no. However, what we did is we limited the number of trainings that we had in the cost to only about 7 people to start with. Okay. The assumption that we would look for more people who are certified already than training because in the past, we're going back 5-10 years now, the selling point for them to be a volunteer firefighter was to come and get trained, give us 2 years, and that gave them a platform to go be able to apply to other to like Roswell or so forth, but still be able to volunteer with us.
And my last question was, do we know that this level of staffing will get us to a point where we can get a no-cost mutual aid agreement with Roswell?
So the answer is no, we don't know that number. The Roswell chief hasn't committed to anything. We just don't know what that number would be. It's an unknown quantity, and especially in the current environment with Roswell, until the new council and new mayor come on, we hesitate to have that conversation.
So in a worst case environment, then we take your $70,000 average over 3 years, you need to include a cost component to pay Roswell for off hours coverage.
That's right, the option 2. Okay. Yes. Yes, sir.
Scott, George Benton. If we're talking about the volunteer fire department as an emergency service only, they would still have to roll ambulances at the same time they respond. Is that not true? Roswell does that because you can't transport, fire departments can't transport people to hospitals, so they always roll an ambulance. So if we went to emergency services only, they would still be rolling ambulances when the fire department responded?
That's right, should an ambulance be needed. But remember, an ambulance is a contracted service with an ambulatory service, not a function of the fire department in Roswell or anyplace else.
Right, and 911 rolls it every time they dispatch the fire department in Roswell for emergency.
That's right.
Service.
Yes. Eddie.
Yep.
Eddie Mathis. On your three options, I see two other options that are up there. One is going back to the same agreement we have with Roswell, where they provide fire, police, full-blown, where we have certainty. We make a phone call, we know it goes to Roswell 911. You know, Roswell's going to respond.
That was option one.
And, well, I didn't get that when I saw it, but the other thing that might be to fully staff a full-blown fire department here, where we have certainty, because all I'm hearing here is uncertainty. Maybe this, maybe that, we don't know. And I think with police and fire, we need to have certainty. There needs to be no doubt about, when you make a phone call to 911, who's going to answer and who's going to respond, and there should not be this question about leaving it up to the 911 operator to decide who responds. And that's my biggest problem with all this, is there's no certainty, and this is something there needs to be certainty around, where there's no question about it when you call 911.
Thank you. Do we have any comments on chat?
Not yet.
Oh, sorry. Yes, sir.
Hi. Jim Close, can I ask a favor and roll that back one to somebody, and forgive me if I don't quite understand. I need to know what that actually represents. Why is the three where it is and the one where it is? Is this is this three different graphs or?
No, what this is it's a cost risk matrix. So as risk goes up, the bubble goes up, and as costs go up, it moves to the right. So the cheaper option with less risk is option three. And again, I want to point out that it's subjective based off of.
I understand that. I'm just trying to make sure I understand that option two appears to have a higher cost and the lowest risk.
That's right, because we would be training our own firefighters and EMT.
Okay.
Plus, we would have Roswell's.
I understand. I just wasn't clear on you. Because see, to me, that's X minus X. Y minus O.
You put it in grass. Got it.
It's a whole different thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Gina Davis South, question. When you say 24-hour, 24-7 coverage, are you saying somebody will be in that building?
No, specifically, so that's option one, which is dissolve MPPFR and continue with Roswell agreement only and potentially get better coverage.
But when you say 24-hour coverage, will we have somebody in that building? That's dissolving.
It's dissolving in PBFR.
There'll be nobody, nothing.
So nobody would be in there.
Okay.
We 24-hour coverage by Roswell.
Okay. Well, forget about this. You did say we have an option of 24-hour coverage. Is somebody going to be in that building if we have that? Or are they going to be 5 to 10 minutes away?
No.
With the staffing, can you back up one? With the staffing level, again, fictitious, made up for illustrative purposes only, they would be in the building. There would be at least two people in the building 71% of every day, based off of a fictitious set.
And may I add to that, if there was going to be 24/7, that number of volunteers would have to be trained up to about 26,
right,
which he also mentioned. You'd have to have at least 26 volunteers to have a coverage of basically.
I agree. So when I hear full staffing, that's what makes me think.
Right. And a bunch of that has to do with the training that they come in with and the recruitment from the community to get more people rotating in that like used to happen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, Susan.
Suzanne Close. So on option two, I know at one time we talked about that if we were going to reinstate the fire department, one of the things you were thinking about was paying someone to be a fire chief. to recruit people and to train people. So is that part of number two?
That is a choice that council and City Hall would have to make, because I think that would be an appointed position to start with, and we have no power to make that decision. So but it wasn't included in the review.
Was not included in these guidelines.
So it's not included, if we do that, it's not included in the figures either.
No. Yes, sir.
Scott Lloyd, this is true. Thank you for all of the work that went into this. When John and Carl are here, what is the maximum staffing we've had in Mountain Park historically? How many have we ever had consistent coverage in the fire department other than like New Year's Eve and the special dates that they try to cover?
Yeah, I want to throw that one to Lloyd because I honestly don't know the answer to that question, if we even have an answer at this point. The chief would know.
At the height of when John and Carl were here, and when they were staffing the station 24/7 on the weekends, and some portion of the nights during the week, we had 23 volunteers trained. Any two of those volunteers, no matter who they were, if they were in the station, they had the training and authorization to take the equipment out and go to the scene of whatever.
So, but to answer George's question a little bit more directly, that still didn't provide, they didn't staff 24
hours. Even at 23, it did not give us 24/7.
Okay.
Because like it is right now with Roswell, like it is going to be with us, these people have to have a full-time job somewhere to put food on the table for their family. And they're volunteering their time that they have available. And whether or not we're going to get to the point with 28 is still up in the air. That gives us our best chance, but we don't know it until we get there.
Again, this illustrative purpose is asking every volunteer to give 13 hours a week, which nearly half a day. So
what is the path forward? Is it a council decision? Is your recommendation to wait until you know what Roswell would require before we begin to spend $1,000 to purchase equipment? What are your thoughts about where we go from here?
So the path forward is I'm going to take a lot of the feedback, finalize a report for council in December. It's absolutely up to council, and I would argue that it's absolutely up to the incoming council, because we have the agreement coming up in January that needs to be renewed. We should have further conversations with, I would argue that we have further conversations regardless of what path council chooses, whether to reconstitute MPVFR or not. We should continue to have, so we can find out what it would take to get an IGA in place. If we didn't have an IGA and if we didn't stand up MPVFR, is there a willingness from Roswell to provide broader services, better costs, and so forth? Those are the things I think need to still be explored over the next several months, especially as a new council and mayor come in Roswell. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation is I'm going to give it to council to make that decision. I'm trying to get them all the facts so that they have it available.
Scott.
Yes, sir.
Jim Steele. I will just share with you that I have been in conversation with the mayor-elect of Roswell. I met with him last week. I spoke with him again today. He has not guaranteed me, but he has given me his promise that he is going to go to his new council and ask that everything not change in January until everybody has a chance to get their feet under them, that we have a chance to talk about the relationship. Part of his platform was we can't be screwing over our sister cities in situations like this, and he feels like he's got a lot of support in that respect, that we can go back and we can sit down and we can talk about public safety in a different light. With that said, please understand he has the same situation that I have. He has a council that he has to convince. And there are new members on council, and they need the chance to become familiar with the situation. The current council members, incumbents, they will hopefully be open-minded about sitting down and looking at the relationship and looking at the math involved in this relationship. In the meantime, I do feel like that we are going to have the public safety that we need, whether it comes from Fulton County Sheriff's Department, or whether it comes from the Roswell Fire Department, or whether it comes from MPVFR, if we have an emergency. So I feel much more confident today than I did a month ago, and I certainly hope that by the second and third month of next year, we are looking at putting public safety as a less concern for this community. So we'll see.
How many new council members do they have?
They've got a runoff one seat, but they have two new ones, Lee Hills and Paul Brandstrom.
Oh, okay.
And so I look forward to meeting. There's going to be a little meeting, which we're going to do introductions with them here soon. So,
good. Yeah. That would be nice.
A little ripping roll. So, I just want to share that.
Phil Moon, thank you for all the work you've done. If I had a medical emergency and knew that I had a heart attack and needed to go to the hospital, why would I call the fire department? Isn't that duplication of services?
You call 911. 911 dispatch, fire, EMT, and an ambulance. Because the ambulance is contracted service. The fire, EMT is spread out throughout the Roswell area. They would most likely be able to respond first, provide life saving until an ambulance out there.
I don't call her.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, the ambulance normally will show up. You just call 911. The fire department shows up until the ambulance.
Please stand up.
I'm sorry. The fire department, Roswell, in my case, four times, showed up before the ambulance got there. So they were able to analyze the situation, help out where they could until ambulance services arrived. So I think, like George said, they were required to come.
Yeah, AMR is a regional ambulance service, so they're who we're contracted with in this area. So that's who is dispatched. Also, I failed to mention this. Tomorrow, we're having a North Fulton Municipal Association meeting, which is a meeting of the North Fulton cities. And the topic of discussion is a North Fulton jail authority, too. So there is a conversation taking place about having a local policing or jailing authority here in North Fulton instead of everybody being shipped down to Rice Street. The conversation has more to do with the police departments because of the time out of service when they have to transport people downtown and stuff like that. So there is a lot of things that are taking place in North Fulton that might benefit us eventually. We're hoping these conversations continue and are able to come to a good fruition. So.
I know I have two questions. I want to see if there's anybody on.
Not yet.
No questions on Zoom? Yes, ma'am.
So you may have covered this. I was just curious if we went to staff up the MPVR, is that money out of residents' pockets or is that money already set aside?
I'm going to try to answer your question succinctly. So yes, it is money out of the tax base. So yes, out of citizens. I would argue that it's already money that you're spending on Roswell. We're spending on Roswell. If we continue with the Roswell agreement in option two here, we continue with Roswell and stood up, it would continue to be out of the tax base, but it would be an increased cost because we would be standing up both. With the idea ultimately that we wouldn't need Roswell's agreement anymore, and so then the cost would go back down ultimately. So there'd be a bump in expenses and go back down.
Thank you.
I'm still Jim.
I was worried about that.
Okay. Okay. If it's public record, I'd like to know if John was a paid fire chief. If we had a paid fire chief during that era.
No, he was not.
Okay.
Dedicated.
John.
Yeah.
Come back.
I believe he's in Tennessee, so you may have to yell a little louder.
Alabama.
Oh, no.
Dawn O'Shea, I have a question. Have you guys reached out to surrounding volunteer fire departments? I'm curious as to if they're having difficulty staffing based on the nationwide problem right now with trying to get people in positions everywhere? Like, have they seen a decrease because of all of this?
The committee specifically has not reached out, but I know Lloyd has an answer.
If you look anywhere close by, and I'm talking about anywhere in the 35-mile radius, there is not another voluntary fire department.
Wow. All right, can I add to that, if I may? At the last North Fulton Municipal Association meeting, we were talking about the North Fulton Jail Authority, and there was also discussion about recruiting for police and for fire, mm-hmm. and the discussion among the chiefs that were present was that, yes, there is a real challenge with that, because we're all fishing in the same pot. And so there's, you know, a lot of competition for the limited number of candidates that are available out there, whether it be for paid and or volunteer, period. So.
Okay, and then my second part two.
Part two, Mark, Mike, and then I think we're probably close to done.
The reason why I asked too, you know, being, I'm a teacher, and we're having difficulty getting teachers into the classroom. So, and I know that it is just kind of a problem. And I know we have no idea when it's going to end. So I'm assuming that the fire departments and the police departments, and they can't look into that crystal ball either. And then my second question about the training. So when I was getting my degree, I got a scholarship for part of my education. And then I had to commit to a certain number of years teaching in the community to not have to pay that back. I know we're talking about volunteers, so it might be a little bit different, but is there any way to do something like that?
So the short answer to that is yes, and goes a bit to what Mark was asking in the previous question. We can ask them to commit to a certain amount of time if we're going to be paying for their training, because we are making an actual investment in them that's monetary. And we can. What we cannot do, from what I understand, is we can't ask them to commit to a specific amount of time because they are volunteering. But if they renege on that time commitment that they committed to, we can't ask them to pay a portion or all of the money back.
Okay.
Mark and then Mike.
Mark Murphy. A question or a point I have. I think the risk profiles of one and two are dangerously close. But they're different risks. So the risk with number one is, do we trust Roswell to perform for us? I would say the professionals, they've done it for years, probably yes. The risk with number two is, can we, given the state of affairs of Mountain Park Volunteer Fire and fishing in the same pool for volunteers, can we execute? So we would have an executional risk. Can we do this at a level that's good enough for Roswell? So it would be my suggestion there they're a little bit closer than you portray. But
That's fair.
But my eyes are also not very good. I can't read everything.
Yeah, and I built it on a 16x4, and then it's kind of squishy. Mike.
Mike McKenzie, I'm just trying to put my head around how you were sequenced everything. Is part of the committee's challenge getting the 18 to 28 people up to speed at X number of dollars? But as we phase that into enough mass to be able to accommodate our needs as a community, would we still be paying Roswell to provide the necessary responses?
Yes.
Or do we end up with an overlap of even additional expense, and we never ever reach our mass because we don't get enough bodies in to be able to perform the job properly?
So that is somewhat built into option two, right? There's, we would be paying Roswell at the same time we would be training and staffing up. The conversation that we had, and it's purely conversation, there's no necessarily plan in that, would be that we look to say, okay, we want 1 day or 2 days, like the weekend, fully staffed, or 80% for the weekend staff. And then we would add in a day as we train more people or more volunteers, and add in a day until we got to 7 days. At some point, whatever that point is, that again, that's a conversation with Roswell on reinstituting the IGA, we would then discontinue the contract agreement, because the contract agreement, the way it's written today, is we can discontinue a 30-day notice. So now whether that'll stay that way in the future, that's based off a contract, right? But the idea would be that we look to 1 day, and then 2 days, and then 3 days, and we build it up so that we're covering ultimately 7 days to some 70% to 80% of staffing for that full day. And then at some point, cancel the contract with Roswell and just have the IGA in place. My suspicion, based off of running the numbers, is that's a 12 to 18 month buildup and training. So you'd have a year, year and a half worth of double cost there. Yes, ma'am. Does that answer your question, Mike?
No, thank you.
Building on that, Marie Riles, thank you. Is that if we get up there where we're staffed up and somebody shifts, the economy shifts, things happen, and now we're down, we could potentially have let go of that contract, but now we have, say, 2 days a week that we're not covered, or we have certain hours that we're not covered at all.
It's tempting to think of it that way, but with an intergovernmental agreement, regardless of whether we actually have somebody staffed, they would still be compelled to respond.
Thank you. That's the right word.
They would, with the intergovernmental agreement. Just like we, if you go back to that map matrix that I showed, we would have responded to 240 calls inside Roswell with the intergovernmental agreement. So it's not necessarily based off of a contract where we're paying money for their services, but intergovernmental agreement.
It's mutual aid. It's mutual aid or automatic aid. It's one that, depending upon what is established between the two departments.
Yes, ma'am.
Nancy Braswell, at what point, if we can't provide our part of the agreement, does Roswell say we have to do something about this?
With the IGA?
Yes, say our volunteers, we all know what that means. That can change. We've seen it here. We've seen it, how it's gone from John and Carla down to nothing, where they have struggled. And we say Roswell has struggled having full staff. Do we not think we will struggle having a volunteer staff? At what point will Roswell say, we have to change this agreement, you're not holding up your part of the bargain, not your fault, you just can't get the staff? What happens then? Is it a 30-day and then we renegotiate, just like we can stop it in 30 days?
Again, I think that would be purely speculation on our part. I mean,
but I can speak to that if you like.
Sure.
Okay.
So part of the conversation was something similar to that. You know, is if our level of service from MPVFR is here, then maybe Roswell's is down here. If this goes down, that's going to go up. And it needs to be a fluid type arrangement so that if we do go through a period where we do not have the staffing that we would like to have or required to have, then we know that there's going to be an increase in our costs. But there's also going to be a decrease if we're not, you know, if we're not staffing as much. So it was just one of the ideas that we toyed with in terms of not having this 30-day. We want a contract. We want something that's a length of time that gives everybody a chance to kind of get comfortable and in the relationship and figure all the kinks out, and then do it on an annual basis, or every 3 years, if they're willing to do that. But I do feel like there is going to be some working together, not like it was last year or the year before when I was told, that's your math, this is our math, and this is what we're doing. So I do feel like that there is a happy medium there, because it's a good point. If we do become understaffed and we're not providing the reciprocating responses, then of course they deserve to be getting more because they're doing all of the responses. So
I'm going to give it 2 more minutes so we can be able to set up for the working session here. But Nancy.
Nancy Singer, just to follow up on what we're talking about staffing. In the beginning, I think you said that we've already lost 2 of the new recruits or potential recruits. Did I hear that correctly?
We had 4 untrained, and now we have 2 that remain committed. That is firm commitments. The other two, I can't speak to. They've just kind of stopped showing up, so why?
Would you not follow up with them to find out?
So,
well, recruiting has been the primary problem. That's Nancy Braswell just saying that's our primary problem.
So if I can just be a little bit blunt about it, part of the issue with the recruits and the volunteers is they also read social media. They know what's going on. And so they see the name calling of the volunteer fire department. They see a lot of other things that are happening. They also see that there hasn't been a commitment from council to fund MPPFR in the last year. And they're saying, why should I volunteer and commit time when there's no reciprocating?
But we did, 40,000. We did commit.
Yeah, we have.
They haven't gotten it.
But it hasn't. Scott, also speak to the training challenges that you've had.
Yeah, so part of the training challenges, most of the schools shut down for COVID, so people that were trained could not get recertified or retrained. Many of the schools that are now opening back up are run by cities such as Woodstock or Roswell, and so they're filling them up with their own people first, so our ability to actually get people into those classes remains limited. Most of those are the firefighters. A lot of the EMT classes are run by colleges such as Chattahoochee Technical College and others. So there's a possibility, that's why we looked at the third option of what if we just did EMT. So most of those challenges are just getting people into those classes and having space available. And then at the same time, funding those classes so that people can go. So.
We do have one question on the Zoom.
Great. This
is
one on Zoom.
It was worth it, wasn't it? This is from Kendall Gray, and Ken says, for nuisance and public safety calls, like loud music in the middle of the night, kids racing up and down the street, etc., should we call the number you gave for Fulton County to request more patrolling and other non-emergent concerns?
I would think it would depend on the situation. Based off of what I hear, yes, that would sound more like a non-emergency, but again, if they're unsure, call 911 and the 911 dispatcher can make a determination.
I kind of yada yada yada, but folks racing through stop signs and that sort of thing.
That would be criminal activity. Granted, traffic violation, criminal activity, but
they're going to be gone if they're racing through town. They're going to be gone. This was actually part of the conversation, and what we've asked for is the possibility of having potential deputies, if they're in this area, which I'm doodling up here. Have them placed in certain areas to identify traffic violations like that. The running of stop signs. You can't do speed because we don't really have enough room in Mountain Park for them to be able to do a speed trap type thing. But they can watch for other violations. I shouldn't say speed trap. I know for speed calming.
I like speed trap.
Yeah, actually, that's a problem. So the point is that we are talking and we are looking at other ways that they may be able to assist us in tamping down some of the behavior. Because I know that during rush hours, in the mornings and the afternoon, I'm sure those ladies will tell you, they sit there and they can see people zooming through Mountain Park. Coming home or going to work, and they fly through, even with the tapers, so whatever you call it.
Jim, speed. Can you tell speed them tapers? That the sheriff said, three came to me the other day, and they are already up here. They have, I don't know if everyone knows, that they're being stationed up here, and they'll be going to North Fulton Homes serving, and they've moved up here.
Some of them live
already.
Lieutenant Colonel Johnson lives in Alpharetta.
Yeah, they're already up here.
I'm going to take one more comment because we're getting close to time. So, Nancy.
Thank you, Nancy Singer. One last comment, I guess. So I just saw on the news that the Fulton Sheriff's Department just had a large employment thing.
Job fair, career fair.
Thank you. On Saturday, they currently have 170 openings in there for deputy sheriffs, I guess, or within the sheriff's department, and they're currently paying $9,000 for new recruits. So they're like 10% of their total
compensation.
What they were, I think they've only had something like 1,500 or 1,700, and they're currently short like 170. So I don't know if.
They also, what they're doing with that.
And that's going to create a problem, or if they're going to be recruiting and hopefully beefing up North Fulton area with some of their.
Yeah, they shared that at that meeting, which kind of made some of the other departments go, oh, great. They're getting $9,000 signing bonuses. You have to give back $4,000, if I'm not mistaken. $4,000 of that if you don't stay in service for at least 3 years. So, and also, I will reiterate that they did. Sheriff Labatt said that if there are any individuals, whether they're post-certified or not, that would like to serve as deputies in the North Fulton area, that they will certainly be more than happy to meet with them, talk with them, put them through the application process, and give them a patrol car.
Can I get a gift ticket at my stop sign?
I want a ticket at my stop sign.
So, and I think we have some post-certified individuals that live in Mountain Park, so I certainly would hope that maybe they would be willing to consider that.
We have officially reached our time because we're 1 minute over. I want to thank everyone for coming today, and this will be posted on the city website.
Thank you.